You're listening to the Tribe Tech Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tribe Tech Podcast by Tech Southwest. I'm Robert Hillier and my co-host is Fayaza Khan.
Hello.
Today we're looking at how tech businesses in the Southwest are finding the skills and talent they need to be fit for the future and ready to play in the global marketplace.
We're speaking to Lindsay Lucas from Software Solved, also one of the Tech Southwest Award winners and one of this year's judges at the Tech Southwest Awards.
So many developers who were previously based in London are now looking to relocate into the Southwest.
Robert Wilshire is also on the podcast today. He's from Software Cornwall, which is a wonderful initiative that encourages children from as young as six into tech.
I've been doing some really cool stuff and you can do some amazing things down here, but we just have to let everyone know we are doing it.
And we also have Ben Cooper from Scout Consulting, who is a mentor, business advisor, and angel investor, among other things. He helps SMEs reach their goals.
Are they aware of their own shortcomings and are they prepared to bring the right people in? Found with startups, you know, they've got to be prepared to take a back step.
And they're all involved in this year's Tech Southwest Awards in some way. So we'll start with Robert Wilshire from Software Cornwall, which has started Mission to Mars, an education outreach program encouraging young children into tech.
Tweet now, Tech SW Official.
I took the Mission to Mars online for our July mission. Obviously, we normally have a large room with, as was booked, 37 students from around the county and some Scotland actually joining us to come along and work in teams to create a code for our rovers, our Mission to Mars rovers. So they work together and collaborate, they learn soft skills and all kinds of ways of what it's like to be in the industry. It's a very popular work experience, and it was going well, but obviously then we had the lockdown. So I thought we better try and do something different. So I worked out a way of doing this completely online with students. So we had a Zoom meeting as the meeting room with Zoom breakout rooms as their desk, you might say, so they could all work together. They also had a Discord channel where they could all talk to each other and swap ideas and do the usual silliness that goes on in Discord. They also used Git and GitHub to swap the files between each other very quickly, and also meant that I could then download the code from GitHub onto a rover, and then using the Zoom video, I could then show them what their code was actually doing on the rover in reality. So then they would go back to their teams and then adjust the code accordingly, working through the series of stories that we give them. It all worked really well, so much so that I've just literally yesterday booked in, I'm hoping, 15 students to do the same thing again in about 2 weeks' time. I've also managed to get some of the CEOs of my local software companies to come along and chat to the students over a couple of days as well. So they're really going to be getting a full grounding of what it's like. And also Cornwall Council now are doing a virtual work experience weeks in December and March. We hope to be joining in with that as well. So that schools are now, who haven't done any work experience, and I think we might have been the only one running this summer, we're going to be joining in with them around the county, and 1,000 students at least have signed up already.
That's so amazing. And I think, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously the whole point of this initiative and your role is to encourage more people into the software sector, building and coding, and to just be more tech advanced. But also, it just proves, because you've been doing some work in Aberdeen as well, haven't you? And that just proves that Cornwall is, and the Southwest in general is really a leader on this front.
Well, leader, I think, is the right expression, because the teacher from the school in Aberdeen that sends their students down to us says that we're the closest work experience that offers this kind of work experience.
What?
So literally from one end of the county to the other. But the fact that we've gone online like this, it meant that the two students who joined in didn't actually have to come down to Cornwall for a week. So it was, you know, parents had to come down here on a holiday, and while the children were doing the Mission to Mars, they were, you know, holidaying in Cornwall.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's actually made it easier for them to join in, and it worked perfectly. It was great.
That's amazing.
So it sounds as if you've really grasped the opportunity then offered by the lockdown. It seems like you moved extremely quickly not to let it get in your way and stop the things you wanted to do. So do you think that it will help other people within Cornwall see the rest of the UK and therefore the rest of the world as a bit closer and a bit more of an opportunity by looking at what you've been able to do so quickly and it would appear so seamlessly?
I think so. It means that we can, obviously as Software Cornwall, my outreach is to Cornish students in Cornwall, to make them realise that there is an opportunity for them to get a really interesting and well-paid career locally. So to us, to reach around the world is a possibility, but then again, we wouldn't necessarily be framing it to local students anymore. So it has, you know, positive sides and negative sides. The main negative side is we're currently still not funded to do this. Haven't been for over 12 months now. So this is just something that Software Corp we're trying to do. We're trying to get funding to do this. We're currently completely unfunded. So to actually offer this on a more regular basis to a wider audience is not something we can actually financially do.
That's super sad. I hope anyone who's listening will actually look into funding you guys, and maybe we could have a whole, I don't know, 5 or 6 different companies funding, because obviously one of the things that we're talking about all the time is the lack of skills within tech in the Southwest. It's something that people find quite difficult. Everyone we speak to, practically every podcast we speak on, has this issue, and well, that issue is going to be exacerbated if the funding isn't there for very valuable programs like yours.
Well, we have a new program that's an e-funded program that has literally just been signed off, which is about creating the training for people to get into tech without having to go through like the educational system, you know, GCSEs, A-levels, degree, by just providing them, we hope, just providing them the training that they need to get into a job. This has only literally just been started and signed off, so less than a week ago. So this is still very, very new, and we've got a long way to go before that actually takes place. But, you know, our mission to Mars is the inspiration we need to the youngsters.
So where do you think those gaps are now then, from you sparking that initial interest and awareness of the potential of working within this field, all the way through to actually turning it into a career? Where do you think now, for a young person in Cornwall, where are the blocks and the challenges where they might fall away and fall out of the sector?
To study it, it's much harder in Cornwall. We have Farmers University and Plymouth University, and there are apprenticeships you can do, but the numbers coming through are very small locally. So if you want to study it, really you have to leave the county. And if you leave the county, then you may not come back.
Yeah.
So, and of course, you will get paid more in the bright lights of the big cities, but the costs are inherently higher, which is something I always point out to students, having worked in central London myself. But we have a good bit of advantages down here. It's the work-life balance. We also, companies have told me that they have problems with people moving down to the southwest. They have to pay somebody to come and move down here and work for them, and they find they don't like it. They're not used to the lifestyle. They think it's all great, you know, fantastic looking thing, but you actually have to like it, and some people don't, and it's expensive to pay relocation fees to get somebody to move.
So what do you think are the solutions to that, and does it just need the sector to get bigger and more well known and be seen as less of a risk?
Yes,
maybe for people.
No, it has to be more well known, because the parents are the greatest drivers, I think, of children's careers. Parents have a great influence on their offspring, and if they don't know about what we're doing, then the children will know less about it. If their parents haven't heard about it, oh, I've never heard of them, it can't be that good. No matter how much, you know, we try and say on a small scale, it has to be done on a big scale. This is something we've mentioned before to the Digital Skills Partnership. You know, the industry needs to be more visible. I mean, we're all just working in offices on computers, or now at home. It's a completely invisible industry. And it's one of the things I've discovered when I'm going around all the schools is most children have never heard of Goonhilly.
Wow.
The Satellite Earth Station. I mean, that is a massive, more down on the lizard. You can't miss it. Really, you can't miss it. If you're in the area, it just sticks out of the landscape. But children haven't learnt about that. I mean, I grew up in Surrey and I knew about Goonhilly as a child.
Mm.
So it's that lack of knowledge that causes the students not to think about it as a career, as an option. So we need to get more of the industry making more of a noise so that everybody gets to hear about it. Yeah, so then the drive will be there if students realise, you know, that they can do this kind of stuff. The educational system will have to then follow up and pick up on what the students want to do. But also us as the industry needs to require pathways into what the students need and what the companies need, which is what this new initiative of ours, we hope, will start to do as well.
Do you think it's hard when the economy is being built on SMEs and with a that without an Apple or a Google or a big, you know, Silicon Valley style company, that it is going to be difficult to really get that kind of that traction that you need from the young people, because the brands that maybe they are attracted to and they work with, it's not what Cornwall's ever really going to be able to offer, is it? So how do you pull it together so it's almost so it's bigger than the sum of its parts in that way?
No, I don't believe that. I think the big tech companies are doing the big things, but the small companies down here in Cornwall are doing amazing things too. You know, we've got the space storage system from the Spaceport Cornwall, we've got Goon Helio, already mentioned before. And all the time I'm bumping into companies that do amazing things. And Engineering Arts down in Penryn make robots, design and build robots, which require the programming as well, which is what Software Cornwall are interested in. And these things go into theme parks and museums all around the world. Their workshop is just the most amazing place to visit. There's another company, quite a small one, down in Mousel, that uses, I believe, artificial intelligence to listen and monitor the sounds in the ocean to actually understand what animal life is actually in there and recognise it. That's built in Mousel, a tiny Cornish village. There's all these kinds of cases all around the place, but quite often we haven't heard about these companies and what they're doing, because they're dealing with their businesses, they're dealing with, you know, their customers on a day-to-day basis. But we need to encourage them to look forwards and look outwards to actually, you know, make a bigger noise about down here, about what we're all doing. And we're doing some really cool stuff, and you can do some amazing things down here, but we just have to let everyone know we aren't doing it.
Well, if you can invest in the Software Cornwall programme, do contact them, because it is an investment into the future.
So let's hear now from Lindsay Lucas, the MD at Software Solved, who's also on the judging panel for this year's awards. She told us about how she manages the challenge of finding the right people for her business.
Yeah, so a lot of it is about finding recruitment agents that really just understand your business. I mean, there are a lot of good ones out there. We work really closely with Sarah West, and she really takes time to get to know our business and really understand what it is that we need. So I think in terms of the talent pool, it's really interesting to see what is happening out there at the moment in terms of who is coming to market and what skills they've got available to them. And actually our home working policy that we've had for years has actually enabled us to bring on talent from Cornwall as well as Devon. We also have people based in Birmingham and Manchester. So we're able to spread the team as far as we need to. And I think that's the one thing that other organisations will also be finding, because of the whole remote working piece, that they can actually go out and fish a little bit wider and get the skill sets that they really, really need, rather than sort of compromising or having to invest a huge amount of training in individuals that aren't quite there yet. So it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, because actually in the Southwest, there are a lot of tech organisations all looking for top talent, which is great on one hand. It's a pain when you're going out and trying to find new people. But actually, I think Software Solved has got a really good reputation. So when we do go out and start talking to people, we have had quite a number of applications. And you may have seen that we've recently been through a little bit of a reorganisation that sadly saw us lose four people within the management area. But actually, we've created 9 new roles. We've filled 6 of those already. So this reorg only happened in July. We've filled 6 of those roles already, and we're currently interviewing for the 3 remaining ones. And we've had a huge number of applications for those. So it entirely depends on which area you're fishing, whether you're going just purely for tech or whether you're looking for wider skills in other areas, I guess.
What actually are the roles that here in the Southwest we have a shortage in? Because one of the things that we do speak about in all of our podcasts, almost to every single person that we speak to is the skills shortage here, and also the fact that, you know, sometimes people don't want to move. So what is it that we are lacking or need more of in this area?
Yeah, I think data science, has been a lot of work done recently around sort of data science with the, I think it's part of the Southwest Skills Programme. They've been looking into how we can increase our data science skills. So there's a lot going into that, but that is a sort of a natural gap and somewhere which is an exploding area that people really need to get behind. So I think that's a really important place for us to sort of invest time in. From our perspective, it's the development skills, but it's not, we look for a very specific type of developer. So we would look for someone who is very well-rounded, so a full stack developer, who is capable of managing all different sorts of technologies, but mainly obviously Microsoft, because that's our specialism. But I do see other organizations who are sort of advertising for Python skills, which is mostly data related, but also looking into other areas like .NET, such as us. So I think it's those sort of deeper technical skills,
yeah,
which are the ones that are most sought after, and rightly so, because they're the ones who are actually creating the software that is needed. But equally, we shouldn't overlook the project managers, business analysts, and people at that level as well, because finding a good business analyst who can really take an idea from somebody and distill that down into something that technical people can really understand and deliver against, that is quite an art, and those are few and far between within the Southwest, in my opinion.
Do you have a way of feeding into, for example, what schools might be teaching or what colleges might be teaching, so they're really up to date and they have a bit of a vision of the future to inform where they put people on work experience or people they might bring in to give a little bit of help and guidance? Or do you feel now that you kind of wait to see what comes out and if they fit you or not?
It's a really interesting question, actually, because we're actually trying to do more in terms of engaging with schools and getting people excited, young people excited about STEM careers, and also showcasing what the businesses within the Southwest actually do. I think there are there's more that we could be doing with careers hubs within the Southwest to help share the knowledge that the businesses have with the knowledge that the schools have. But I think the biggest challenge for the schools is that they obviously have curriculums and they have standards that they need to meet in order to adhere to all of their regulations, and those aren't necessarily attuned with what businesses need from those individuals when they're coming out of the other end of the education system. So there's a lot of work to be done there, and I think we're only sort of scratching the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, but there are organisations now looking at how we can actually start to bridge that gap. And I've been involved with Exist, Extra in Science and Technology, for a number of months now, and they are very keen at looking at how we can sort of bring this all together. We've got Exeter City Council doing a lot of work around what was the Flybe Academy, looking at digital skills. We've got the Institute of Technology about to come into Exeter. So there's an awful lot going on that is going to really help start to bridge that gap between business and education. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen over the next sort of 12, 18 months to see how that all starts to unfold.
We've just been speaking to Robert Wiltshire, who runs the Software Cornwall Education Outreach Programme, and he spends a lot of time monitoring job adverts to see the kind of just the language that's used, but the skills that are being sought after as well. And of course, this hasn't changed for many years, but there's always the need to be able to work in a team, to be able to problem solve, and to be able to work collaboratively. And he says often those are quite overlooked. Those kind of soft skills are quite overlooked, but actually it's often the most sought after skills that employers want. Do you find the same thing, maybe if you're taking recent graduates, that some of those elements have been missing from their education?
Maybe we've just been very lucky, but actually the graduates that we've had have been pretty well-rounded when it comes to working as a team, because they've had to do final year projects, which has forced them to work as a team. And actually some of the questioning that we have for them around when they come for interview is all around, what have you done in a team? What challenges have you had when you've come together as a team? So really looking and hunting for that, that skill set to see whether or not they have managed that sort of situation. I think for me, I'm always amazed with the fact that they come out of university and they have very little skills around things like Outlook. Mm. Or they've had skills in Word, Excel, they might have done a little bit of PowerPoint, but it's just those basic office skills that they're not used to managing a diary. They've never had to. They're now coming into a workplace where they have to. We're using things like Microsoft Teams, where they might have done a few Skype calls, but they won't have really used it for that sort of day-to-day communication. They won't have necessarily had to do a full day's work, which I think is sometimes a bit of a challenge.
But,
we have had undergrads, so we have flexible working hours, so we do like a 10 till 12, 2 till 4 as our core hours, and I have had to phone a couple of our graduates to say, or undergraduates to say, it's 10 o'clock, are you okay? it's more on that, for me, it's more on those basic Microsoft skills, just those office skills.
Oh, it's almost kind of life skills. It's sort of life skills coaching, isn't it? That, you know, if someone says 9 o'clock, they actually do mean 9 o'clock.
And, exactly.
Not when you just get out of bed.
Not when you just get up. Yeah, that's
quite interesting. Sorry, I was working late on my own project and actually I've overslept as a result. It's like, well, that's great that you're showing initiative for your own project, but you've got a job to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. So, obviously, you have to be thinking about the future and what comes next and horizon scanning. How easy is it for you to do this at the moment? Do you feel there's a little bit of certainty in what's coming up? Are you able to feel some certainty in that, or are you now having to wait and see economically and socially what might be around the corner?
Yeah, so a little bit of both. I mean, predicting where this all might end up and which industries might be hardest hit is challenging. I think the key thing that has come out of this pandemic is the highlighting how much technology and digital transformation has helped so many organisations to actually continue their businesses. So I think businesses are looking at technology with a slightly different view now. They're not just looking at it as a large expensive thing that we might get around to one day. They're actually looking at it as an enabler. But I think the key thing is which industries are actually going to be able to be spending that money and not having to put that to one side for actually covering more basic things like overheads and making sure that they've got all of that covered. So it's very hard for us at the moment with the changing landscape to see what might be coming through. But I'm confident that from a technology perspective, there is definitely a need for tech, for software. So I'm confident that we will still be here in 12 months' time for sure. Mm. What industries we'll be working with, I don't know. It depends on what really comes out of that period.
Probably health and green tech. That just seems to be the things that are going forward at the moment. But I think it's
and possibly agri-tech as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in agri-tech at the moment, which is again quite an exciting area.
Yeah, I think actually the lockdown has brought out quite a few positives. But Lindsay, I was also wondering, what's your involvement with the Tech Southwest Awards this year? Are you going to be taking part at all?
Yeah, we're absolutely taking part. I will be judging as well. And we're sponsoring, so very heavily involved again.
Oh, exciting.
This year.
What are you judging?
I can't remember which categories I'm judging. Sorry, I've got a terrible memory these days.
Something good.
Yeah, it's great to be involved, and it's great. The thing I love about the Tech Southwest Awards is actually seeing all of the great tech and all of the great things that people are doing within the Southwest. So it's a real chance to celebrate all of those industries, all of those great organisations that are doing so much for tech in the Southwest.
Yeah, it's always an evening of shocks, isn't it, when you meet people and they tell you and you say, you do what? And you're based where? Exactly. And it's you know, you're based in Ilfracombe and you're based in Mountain. It's just it never ceases to be amazing. But again, demonstrates how we've got to keep, you know, talking ourselves up all the time, and, you know, not feel that we're a second class region when in fact we're up there with the best.
Absolutely, and not just from a tech perspective. I mean, the beautiful thing about tech is you can take it anywhere, you can do it from anywhere, as long as you've got internet connection, you've got a laptop, you can do tech. So actually being able to be based in the southwest, I mean, I think that we are some of the lucky ones, really. We've got fantastic coastline, fantastic moorland, we've got the ability to remote work, we're able to come together as teams if we want to as well. It's just, I think we've got the best of all worlds, really. And I think that's why so many developers who were previously based in London are now looking to relocate into the southwest, because they've realised that they've got all this amazing surf and all sorts on their doorstep. So they can have that work-life balance.
Tweet now, Tech SW Official.
I really love talking to Lindsay. The time just flew by.
Yeah, another great company down here. So let's go now to Ben Cooper from Scout Consulting, who, quite simply, discovers great businesses and helps them succeed.
I am reaching further down into the southwest now, starting to get very interested in Exeter, Plymouth, all the way down to Falmouth. There's a lot of talent and a lot of opportunity down there, and I'm really keen to try and help as many people as I can. I've been increasingly hearing good things from this area. Obviously, there's a lot going down in Cornwall from a sort of tech perspective. Obviously, a lot focused around sort of space, and obviously the new key being developed for spaceport and all those sorts of things going on down there, but also a lot of software development and coding and gaming. You know, so the great thing, I think, you know, obviously we all know the great thing about tech is it doesn't really matter where you are. There's great opportunities in the southwest for those people who perhaps in the past may have felt a little bit cut off from London. And obviously COVID has shown this, that, you know, even more so that, you know, the ability to operate remotely is completely acceptable and completely doable. So I'm really excited about what's going to be happening in the southwest, I think.
So one of the themes that's developed over the course of doing the podcast, and it's an issue that's raised by almost every company in whatever discussion you have,
yeah,
is around making sure that the skills are right. And finding the right people with the right skills to help businesses. Is that something that you've also come across in your advice?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's interesting because Bristol's pretty well serviced. I think the issue in sort of the Bristol area, and particularly around the sort of surrounding area, is just the demand for it, for coders and developers. And, you know, obviously there's a big tech ecosystem in the sort of Bristol and surrounding area, and obviously now stretching down into the sort of southwest, and there's people available, but it's increasing, you know, demand is really increasing, and so it's really pushing up the value of those people. But what we are also seeing is a real I don't want to call it a brain drain, but I think there's a real shift of people from London down into the sort of southwest, mainly from a quality of life perspective. And I think you see a lot of people who may have made a few quid in London, developers, et cetera, as well. But also seeing that you don't need to be, you know, going back to my point before, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, and you can operate from anywhere. And so I think you're seeing a lot of people shift to the southwest from a lifestyle perspective. But also the issue becomes less so because you can, you know, it doesn't matter if you're working with a developer who's based in Leeds or who's based in Liverpool or wherever, you know, in Falmouth or Plymouth or whatever, you know, you've got video communication, you know, that's come on leaps and bounds, or that, you know, certainly the adoption of it has come on leaps and bounds over the last few months. So I think there's two things going on. There's a kind of shift of lifestyle, shift of people to the southwest with you know, with those types of skill sets, but also there's also the realization that geography isn't a hindrance to those sorts of skill sets.
Do you think it's something that matters more to people from the southwest than to any global client? Do you think there might be a little bit of a hang up that we still have to feel that we have to almost explain why we're based down here and not in London, whereas in fact a lot of people don't really care?
Yeah, I think there is a potential inferiority complex in a way, in so much as that, you know what, you know, you do have to explain yourself, but I think increasingly that's becoming less of an issue to anyone, you know, to anyone and everyone. And I hope, you know, over the next, you know, 12 months or so, we'll see an increasing amount of you know, that will become immaterial. It's about the person, it's about the skill set. You can communicate, you know, you, as effectively. Yeah, look, don't get me wrong, Face to face is important, and you know, and you should try and encourage that. But you don't need, it doesn't need to be a full time thing. So you know, I think you know, that type of collaboration, etc., is less of an issue. And I think, you know, people in the Southwest, I think people are just after skilled people. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter now these days where you live. If you're a great coder or you're a great developer, or you know, I don't care, you're in Land's End, it doesn't matter to me. So you know, as long as you can deliver.
How do you get an SME from idea to scale up? I mean, what is the main thing that a lot of new businesses lack?
Well, my general experience is that you will have, or certainly the companies that I've worked with, is that you will have someone who has a great idea. They're potentially academic, or they're certainly deep within engineering or deep within the industry which they're looking to disrupt, but they don't necessarily have the developed business skills to ensure that they can bring that proposition to market. So they've got a great idea, they've got a lot of passion about it. It's about providing a sort of focused plan for them to deliver it. So it's been, you know, and again, you know, it's the tried and tested tools, isn't it? It's the business canvas, those sorts of things. So you focus on, you know, what your proposition is, how you deliver to the market, who your customers are, how you're meeting their need or their pain points, how you price it and how you cost it. And you know, those are all sorts of things that are, you know, I can help companies, or I do help companies get focus on, and stuff that they don't necessarily know how to do, and then mentor them and help and coach them to be able to develop that themselves, but also, you know, enables me to put them in touch with people who can help them, and who have been, you know, necessarily been through the whole process, you know, more than once in a lot of cases, where they can provide those skill sets that they're missing.
What would you say that you need a lot of money to do it, or actually is it just ideas, well, mentoring that actually is more important?
Yeah, I don't think, no, I've come across a lot of situations where I think it really depends what it is. I mean, you know, if you're I don't think there, you know, I don't think you need, particularly the idea stage, etc., if you can gain momentum, and you know, if you've got a great idea and you've got you're laser focused on your beachhead markets, and you're laser focused on the, you know, the problem that you're solving, and it, you know, it's a genuine solution that people can see, you know, I think, you know, that's enough to get you to kind of seed stage. There are a lot of angel investors around who take advantage of obviously the tax benefits of those sort of SEIS schemes. And increasingly, actually, what I'm seeing increasingly at the moment is there's a lot of seed VC funds that are starting to launch up.
Do you think as we start looking towards global markets and global opportunities that the Southwest as a whole needs to have an identity and a focus and a clearly defined area that it excels at? I mean, Bristol is becoming quite well known, isn't it, within the kind of tech and the creative field. And obviously, you know, it's a big city of 500,000 people, but it's but it's the same size as Cornwall in that one city. Do you think it's do you think it's important for people to look at it as somewhere where you go for a certain specialism, or do we have to accept that it's going to be based around these SMEs, quite often with a focus on the S?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a lot of the things that are driven, certainly around Bristol, and I, you know, I've done quite a lot of work with UWE and University of West of England, and I think it's a lot of it, the drivers and the opportunities you get are what the specialisms of the local academic institutions are. So, you know, so naturally in the Southwest, you've got sort of places like Plymouth, there's a lot of marine tech, you know, and all the way down to Cornwall, you know, through to Cornwall. It seems to me that there's quite a lot of coding or game coding, et cetera, going on down in sort of the Cornwall position. And so I think that's a lot of what the sort of Falmouth incubator do. I think the key thing is probably for the Southwest is probably tech, and that's because, going back to our original conversation, is with tech you don't really need to be anywhere physically. I think, you know, and the Southwest isn't, being in the Southwest isn't a hindrance to that. So it's where you can get support, it's where you can get the ideas known, and so I don't think there's, you know, it doesn't have to be one particular industry, but I think tech is obviously driving disruption in, you know, all the traditional industries at the moment. You know, everyone's talking about the sort of the next industrial revolution, which is, or the next revolution being sort of automation and, you know, more sort of robotics and things like that. I think it's just jumping on all the trends that are, you know, the trends that are happening across, you know, across the country and across the world. And I think from a globalization point of view, I think, again, it will probably be focused on areas where the academic strengths are.
So you're saying it's almost natural that there's identity for businesses in certain parts of the Southwest anyway. But I wonder as well, when you're looking at investing in a business, what are you looking for?
I mean, obviously, there's the idea. I mean, initially, you've got, you know, an idea which is disrupting a normal industry or general industry, but it's also got to solve the problem. It's got to solve the pain points. So, for example, I'm working with a company called Phoretic at the moment, so an investor in it. And what they do is they are reducing the identification of urinary tract infections from 4 days to 15 minutes, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's great tech and it's a really great idea and it's caused, you know, it solves a real big problem. That tech, that's their kind of beachhead market, but obviously they can extract that into, you know, other bacterial infections, et cetera, and identification, but it reduces that time. And I think, you know, it's anything where you take something which is a, you know, a significant issue in its current format and you can make a significant difference to that. You know, that's what I'm looking for. And obviously it's got, you know, then of course there's the value of that market. What's the addressable market, how big it is, you know, and you know, is it worth the investment, to make that much of a disruption, and does, you know, is the likely return to be effective. But, and again, I guess probably the final thing, and I think in most angel investors, certainly, I'm pretty sure VCs are the same as well, would probably say is the team. Do you have confidence in that team to deliver? But also, are they aware of their own shortcomings and are they prepared to bring the right people in? Times is with startups is that, you know, they've got to be prepared to take a back step away from, you know, they may not be the right person to lead the company. They may not be the right person to develop the tech, you know, for whatever reason. They need to be able to recognize that in themselves and that, you know, they may have, in the role they have, they may have taken that as far as they can and that's not their strength anymore. And so, you know, that I think, you know, you're looking at the team to be certainly in the short, you know, in the early stages, to be passionate and driven and to have the skill set to take it forward, but then also to have that recognition that at some point they may have to hand over the reins to someone else and be accepting of that. And that's really difficult for a lot of founders.
It's often, isn't it? It's a dragon's den comment in that I don't like the company idea, but I quite like you, and vice versa.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It's that mixture, because I'm assuming that so much of your skill and the value that you bring in is your ability to have a little bit of an insight into the future. To see where trends and markets are going to be going. Where do you get that information from, and how much of it is to do just with a kind of natural gut instinct, and how much of it can you get from looking at data and looking at market trends?
Yeah, I think you can get a lot of it from looking at market trends, actually. And I think it's an interesting question, Robert, because I think gut feeling is almost an informed feeling, if you know what I mean. So it's you know, you have a gut feeling because you probably have that information in your head, and you know, so I see, so personally I see, you know, working with, like I said, working with universities, working with the incubators, and see, I can see a lot of early stage tech coming along the way, and I can see the kind of the trends of where things are going, or certainly where the you know, certainly where the investment is going. And also I think the key things are is also to focus in on where the government is looking as well. So obviously the government have you know, particular key areas that they want to invest in and ensure that are developed, things like healthcare and those sorts of things. And so those are the areas that are going to attract funding. Those are the areas that are going to attract grant funding. But I think also, actually, one of the interesting and one of the points I'm probably keen to make is that over the last sort of 4 or 5 months through COVID, I think what we've seen actually is a lot of just acceleration of trends that were already happening. You know, so you had trends in health tech, et cetera, and trends in automation, but but COVID has really accelerated a lot of that kind of. So, for example, again, in health tech, again, you talked about Fluretic, but you talk about companies like Occo Health, where they're doing sort of eye tests, etc., on your mobile phone, and there's platforms like Paramino, which is a really early stage company, and that's about linking or enabling sort of psychologists to run their businesses remotely and things like that. So, there's a real drive. These are all things I think that were going to happen or already happening, and COVID's just accelerated those because obviously the need became immediate. And so, in automation as well, I'm working with a company called Indus4, and I've invested in that one as well, which is sort of spun out of UE's launch space. Which is about automation in it, but in smaller companies. So basically, cost-effective automation, robotic cobots, and things like that. All these areas were things that were moving towards, and I think they've just been accelerated by the current situation, but also been accelerated by the fact that the government is throwing huge amounts of money at industry now to try and get the company, get the economy going again and get the economy in a better shape, in fact, to come out of this probably more lean and more effective than it was before.
So you think, for example, now that looking at maybe gaps in planning law and helping planning applications to go through quickly or to do with reskilling or to do with the level?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those kind of big macro ideas.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot in prop tech, actually. Yeah, you're seeing a lot of things there. I think, obviously the government is all about building and about investment and reduction in planning and all. You're quite right. Anything that enables prop tech, enables that industry to move more effectively. Right at the other end of scale, probably not things you necessarily guys are interested in because it's not tech, but it's, all the way down to... working with another guy who's developed a bucket tidy system for brickies, all of a sudden his market is, which was already a healthy market, is only suddenly looking at to be an even more attractive proposition because he's developed something which is very basic and very simple. He's got a patent on it, and all of a sudden, the number of bricklayers and et cetera is probably about to go through the roof. So, there's opportunities at all levels. As you say, follow the trends and follow the, see where people are investing money, see where the government is focusing, and just read the news. You can
it doesn't always, does it, require a prescription to the JP Morgan in-house journal? Brilliant, Ben, thank you very much indeed. That's really interesting.
Good, and
it's given me a good idea about planning app. I'm going to go and design right now.
Great. I'll accept my cut on that.
I'll expect some angel investment as well.
Well, there you go. You'll have to pitch it.
He sounded serious, like he might actually invest if you do a good pitch. You should probably do it.
Yeah, I've just got to do a good pitch. Easy. So we'd like to thank all of our guests who, as always, paint such an exciting picture of what's happening in the Southwest.
And if you're a business here in this region and want to show off what you're doing, tell us about it. We would love you on the podcast. You can get in touch with Tech Southwest on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, wherever. Or you can message me directly at FayalzaK on all platforms.
And just to remind you that the entry fee to the Tech Southwest Awards this year has been ditched. There's now a voluntary contribution of £20 to the WHO COVID fund. Deadline for entry, September the 4th. The shortlist will be out later that month. Try and be part of it if you can.
And thanks for listening. We're back next month.
A Tech Southwest podcast.
Tribe Tech.
You can get in touch with us by tweeting TechSWOfficial.